Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women. Today I'm in Rotterdam, joined by art director and artist Alexandra Zygmunt. Alexandra received her bachelor's degree from Stanford University for interdisciplinary studies in the humanities, focusing on philosophy and visual arts, and then went on to study graphic design at the Parsons School of Design in New York. From 2010 to late 2017, she worked at the New York Times, becoming the art director for the Sunday Review and opinion sections. This involved commissioning original illustrations from artists around the world, up to 8 a week, meaning that's roughly 400 per year. One of her superpowers is visual metaphor, and she used this to push the expected norms of the artwork for the times, inviting video artists, zine makers, comic artists, and painters, in addition to illustrators, to create the editorial visuals. She also co-directed the Times Gallery 7, organized their exhibitions, and has been a judge for numerous illustration competitions, such as American Illustration and the Society of Illustrators. She has worked for a number of other organisations in her capacity as an art coordinator or designer, such as Yerba Buena for the Arts, the National Endowment for the Arts, and Cabinet Magazine. She has many accolades for her work. To mention a few, 3 gold medals from the Society of Illustrators and 2 publisher awards from the New York Times. Alexandra is currently teaching, lecturing, and leading workshops across Europe in both design and art direction, whilst also making time to focus on her own art practice. I'm super excited to be sitting here with Rotterdam as our backdrop to discuss Alexandra's career and talents. Alexandra, welcome to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you.
Could we kick off with you telling me what is an editorial art director and what is it that role does?
All right, so an editorial art director is very specific. At the Times, what it meant was essentially being the director and overseer of a section. In my case, it was the Sunday Review section for opinion. And what it meant was that each week I was putting together a 12 to 14 page section, and I was coordinating the graphic design, all of the illustration, the photography, and the information graphics, commissioning the illustration, and then towards the end of the week, actually designing the page, producing it, and then making sure that everything worked well to go to press on Friday. So it all happened within a 4-day period, and you basically had to repeat the same process week to week, sort of indefinitely. And what was so exciting about it, though, is that it involves so many different people and so many different types of activities. So it's really a graphic design role, because each week you are creating the actual design of the printed page. But everything that you do for the printed page also ends up online. So you also have to coordinate everything that happens within the digital realm for mm-hmm. that section. It involves commissioning illustrations. So essentially you're acting as a curator of illustration. And you're actively reaching out to freelance illustrators all over the world to commission them for articles. And then you work closely with a photo editor to also choose the photography for the section. Mm-hmm. So basically you're making the choice each week for, say, around 25 different articles, whether they should be accompanied by a photograph, an illustration, or an information graphic. So you're the one making that choice and then working with different people within the New York Times team to make that a reality. For me specifically, and what I find is pretty common for editorial art directors at the Times, is that they often end up being experts in illustration. In some ways, they become illustration curators. Mm-hmm. And then the photo editors and the information graphics editors work with you to coordinate the entire visual experience of the paper. Mm-hmm. And then it's also sort of a production role as well, because again, at the end of the week, you are the person that's making sure that the 14-page section has no errors in terms of the visual layout. You also coordinate the actual, you coordinate with the production team to make sure that each image is being produced with the right color tone. Mm-hmm. And Yeah, so you're sort of, you have your hands in all different parts of the process. Mm-hmm. And in that way, it's a very exciting job, but as you can imagine, it also is stressful because you're doing all of these things under a really tight deadline.
And how do you juggle that? Because obviously you've got to have a really strong creative muscle to make decisions quickly and effectively.
Yeah.
And like really, you're putting your neck on the line constantly.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that took a lot of practice over time. Uh-huh. I think that's why actually a lot of people are drawn to this type of position, both as an illustrator or as an art director, because it forces you to make intuitive decisions, and it forces you to have to trust that. And that was something that took a lot of practice. It came over time, that skill. And it came also from working with a lot of illustrators over the years and starting to have an archive assemble in my head. I think the more and more I worked with different illustrators, the more I started to understand a larger ecosystem of people working in the creative industries and knowing who would pair really well with different articles or different topics. And as soon as that archive in my head started expanding, then I felt like I really was able to make better intuitive decisions about who to pair with what article, you know, how to put different visual features together for the Sunday Review. So it really was a process. And that's why I feel like the work that I did 4 years in was much stronger and more informed.
And how do you amass that archive? Because that's what I'm curious about, because you would read an article, right? Or you would get up and you'd be like flipping through, I guess, an archive in your head, like, oh, such and such would be really perfect for this, or hold on, it might be this person, or how does that work?
So, you know, one thing that I reference a lot, actually, is that my dad is a chemist and surgeon, but he's also a shell collector. So he has a massive collection of shells. I've grown up essentially in a collector's household. I love collecting and I love archiving. So at the times, what we've done, me and the team that I worked with, was we created a whole online database of the artists that we either found online, on the web. I would find a lot of people through looking at visual anthologies of comics or of fine artists, whoever. And we would save all of those references within this database, and we would tag them by keyword. So say we would tag one person's portfolio with psychology, colorful, moody, economics, any kind of term that then could help us later create a match or at least brainstorm. So that archive became very important just as a brainstorming tool. It's not how we created these matches, but it was a way to create an archive external from our heads.
I guess over time.
And I think every art director has a different process, and that's something that's interesting about knowing different people working in this field. I have one colleague that makes long lists and will fill up an entire page with lists of artists' names whenever he's brainstorming for a for a certain article, and they almost become like little pieces of art.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And an archive in their own right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So just being nosy, I'm really curious to know about your father's shell collection. How does he archive it? How does it come together?
Yeah, so he's been collecting shells really for my entire childhood. And we had around 20 cabinets in our small apartment in San Francisco that were filled completely with shells that were arranged almost in a museum-style collection. And some of them were behind glass frames so that you could see the whole arrangement. And then others would be within the drawers themselves. So you would open the drawers and the shells would be arranged perfectly in little boxes organized by type. And he also labeled all of the shells with where they were from, with labels that he would put discreetly within the shells. He had also an entire system involving different colored dots that he uses for some type of information about the shells, which I'm not quite sure about. But he also has a collection of every shell book that you can imagine. So he has learned all of the Latin names of the shells and really has a wide understanding of them. And one thing that I hope can happen in the future is a collaboration between the two of us, potentially an exhibition that would involve displaying his shell collection to the public for the first time with my own drawings and paintings.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I would love that.
Cool. Awesome. Okay. So could you tell me kind of what was your career journey up until now?
Yeah.
How did you arrive here?
It was a bit eclectic, perhaps, and circuitous. I studied philosophy and art history and psychology in university. And that was wonderful for me because Stanford University, which is where I went, allows you to craft your own major as long as you can create a compelling, convincing narrative for why you're doing that. So I was able to study whatever I wanted. And then after university, I was also very lucky because I applied for a fellowship and received it to work at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, which was a very interesting contemporary art center in San Francisco. So that's how I actually got my first job in the arts. It was working at this museum. Mm-hmm. And initially, I was actually working as the sort of arts education coordinator. Mm-hmm. And then I just started being interested in design, and I was self-trained. I learned Quark back then, mm-hmm. and then InDesign. And I started making posters and postcards and promo materials for the museum. Mm-hmm. And through doing that, I started to want to take it more seriously, and I started taking night classes. Mm-hmm. And then that eventually prompted me to move to New York and to study graphic design more seriously at Parsons. And it was through studying at Parsons and meeting different professors there that I got my first jobs within graphic design. One of those professors was a wonderful book designer, mm-hmm. who had a wonderful eye for typography and taught me a lot about that. Incidentally, a lot of the books they produced were about science collections and nature, mm-hmm. so this was a really nice fit for me. Yeah. And it was through connections that I made there that I eventually got the job at the New York Times. Mm-hmm. But I do think that this background that I had in philosophy and in the humanities, mm-hmm. was important for me in getting that job. I think that, you know, working at a newspaper, because you are immersed in so many different types of articles and topics, mm-hmm. It really helps to have had a very broad interdisciplinary, mm-hmm. education, mm-hmm. and to be curious about everything. Yeah. And so for me, that helped a lot in interpreting the articles. I think people also sometimes misjudge how important clear communication is to being, mm-hmm. an art director, yeah. or a designer in, uh-huh. general. For me, so much of the job was communicating visual ideas very clearly with all of my collaborators, mm-hmm. with the editors, with illustrators. And so I think, you know, that's another reason why I think having a lot of training in writing and speaking was really great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe a little bit atypical in that role.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So could you tell me, who do you typically work with, and what is a typical day or week? Is there one?
So actually, there are very typical weeks in this position. They tend to follow the same pattern each week. Really, how they would start out is each week at the beginning, I would get articles from the editor I was collaborating with. And so on Monday, Tuesday, I would begin to read all of the articles and start making assignments to different illustrators. I would also be collaborating with the photo editor and the graphics editor to begin to decide which articles would be paired with photography or graphics and which would be paired with illustration. Then on Wednesday and Thursday, typically I would be having a lot of conversations with illustrators, who would be creating illustrations to match with the articles. And then I would also start the graphic design of the newspaper. And then Friday was the most intensive day because that's when you would conclude the whole process. You would get all of the final illustrations in from the illustrators, put them within the final layout, often make the final tweaks to that layout, finalize the cover design, and then also do all of the production, which meant working with an entire production team to color correct all of the imagery, to get all of the imagery online as well, and to just make sure that the final product had no errors in terms of the visual layout and the text itself.
So what I'm curious about is, you know, you talked about having a strong creative muscle and systems so that you can access information for different kind of illustrators or artists who you may work with. When I'm working and there's a huge amount of pressure and there's lack of sleep, or you're continuing, you know, you need to push through for it to hit a deadline, I always worry that, you know, the creative decisions I'm making may be compromised. So I'm really curious how you manage that, especially under weekly, day in, day out pressure on a cycle.
Yeah. Yes, I definitely really feel that pressure all the time. And I worry about the same thing, about losing momentum or losing creativity. I think that for me, visual research and really taking the time to look through that archive I mentioned, to look at magazines, that has been really important for me, to keep on feeling like I'm expanding the range of illustrators and references we're bringing into the paper, mm-hmm. because that was really what was feeding my creativity oftentimes, was in collaborating with artists that had never worked for a newspaper before, mm-hmm. that really had maybe only worked for a gallery, you know, or in the zine world or in all these different ecosystems, but not for the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And so for me, whenever I would have a great collaboration with that kind of artist, it would create an adrenaline rush and a feeling of excitement. And that to me would always fuel this creative feeling and make me want to continue. Mm-hmm. And that actually also applies to working with illustrators whose trade is to do editorial illustration. I think so many illustrators are aware of the need to constantly experiment and to push their own work. Mm-hmm. And so it was always exciting to work with illustrators again and again, to be frequent collaborators, because you would see their work change over time. Mm-hmm. And you could also sort of feel like you were pushing them in a way forward, mm-hmm. you know, to be a collaborator in them expanding their own work.
Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if you could talk about how you came about working with people that just aren't working directly in illustration and graphic design, how you kind of explored and moved into working with video artists or zine makers or painters.
It happened really organically. One specific project that was really important in that evolution happened 2 years into my work at the Times. There was an editor that proposed a new blog for the Times on anxiety. And so each week he commissioned new pieces from writers all over the world on anxiety. And my role became being the curator of that blog and commissioning all of the illustration. And that actually really allowed me to work with artists I had never worked with before. Because anxiety is such a personal topic, it meant that I could work with artists that, you know, were fine artists, were zine artists, and that used their technique and color and composition to create compositions that felt anxious. So that was how I really expanded the range of artists we worked with. And then I ended up later hiring them for jobs that were not about anxiety, but instead about politics or psychology or technology or social security, for example.
And can I ask you how you mentioned looking at magazines, but how do you find new talent or interested, you know, find interest in different kind of genres or the way people make work and art?
Yeah. One thing that I love about the illustration and comics community is that there's a lot of a sense of collaboration. And I think that a lot of illustrators and comics artists come together and create anthologies of their own work. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of focus on self-publishing and of basically coming together to get your work out there in small anthologies. And those, to me, were so helpful for finding new artists because, again, it's like it's a magazine with all different types of work in it. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a lookbook of all these different styles and people. And so I used those types of anthologies a lot. And as a result, for me, going to festivals around the world has been really effective too. I love meeting people in person. Mm-hmm. And I really do find that it's one of the best ways of meeting artists and also fostering creativity, mm-hmm. you know, and being experimental with who you bring into the paper. So, yeah, I guess anthologies, magazines, and then websites that have lots of links to other people's websites. Yeah. You know, I actually really love when illustrators put links to all their different friends or collaborators. Mm-hmm. I usually follow those links, and then it opens up a whole new mm-hmm. world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are the main ways that I find people.
So I'm curious. So I just... thinking of your time with the New York Times mm-hmm. and this very tight deadline and cycle and long hours. So how did you manage finding new people, like you said, yeah. and finding the time to do that research and to explore? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the best parts yeah. as well, isn't it? But again, knowing that you've got all these pressures that you have to deliver.
Yeah. The research actually became more and more difficult. Mm. The harder that my job there got, because mm-hmm. I made a transition kind of halfway into my time at the Times. I became the art director mm-hmm. from being the assistant art director. Mm-hmm. And I found that as soon as I became the lead art director, that research time that I had that was really feeding my creativity was massively diminished. Mm-hmm. And I started to worry that I wasn't being as experimental or creative. Mm-hmm. But what I would always find is that whenever I would leave to go on vacation, and frequently my vacations also involved going to a book fair or art fair, I would come back and I could see that there was new creativity or experimentation in the section mm-hmm. that week, mm-hmm. right when I came back. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that from so many art director friends. You leave on a vacation, you come back, and suddenly the work is so much more creative. Mm. And so that's why I think it's so important to take those breaks. Yeah. And that would be my one big critique of the American system, which typically only lets you go on vacation for 2 to 3 weeks per year. Mm. I think that creative people need that rest and need that sense of exploration, both for themselves and then for their creative work.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah.
Not being in the American system, mm-hmm. but yeah, I regularly take breaks, and I take breaks to just work on my own work as well, because if I don't, then I start feeling really dry in the kind of creative director role.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and then you worry that you're not pushing it forward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so can we talk about visual metaphor? So yeah. You wrote your thesis on visual metaphor, and I think it's one of your superpowers, looking at the work and, you know, kind of the art direction that you had at the Times. So I'm wondering if you can talk about the importance of that in the role as art director for the Times, but also in your own creative artwork.
Yeah, so when I was an undergrad, I studied, you know, philosophy and art history, and the way that those came together for me was writing a dissertation thesis on visual metaphor. What I wrote it on was visual metaphor, specifically in relationship to surrealist painting, mm-hmm. And specifically Magritte, the painter René Magritte, who in some ways can also be considered an illustrator because his paintings work so well as book covers, as illustrations, mm-hmm. you know, and they've been used many times in that regard. So I was just really interested in how he and other surrealist painters went about combining different images into fused images to create a strong concept, to create a new meaning, essentially. Mm-hmm. I was interested in what the visual equivalent of a verbal metaphor might be. And so my thesis was a study of that. And then what was interesting is when I, you know, once I graduated, I started reading the Times quite a lot before I ever worked there. Mm-hmm. And I became so interested in the illustration that I would see in the opinion section, actually, because I could see that it was using the same methods of metaphor that I had studied in these surrealist painters. Mm-hmm. And so I was already really starting to be interested in illustration. And so then the fact that I actually ended up becoming the art director of that section is quite incredible.
That must be awesome as well when you got totally, it. It must have felt like
yeah, I did.
Out of body experience.
It was. It was very surreal.
Yeah.
You know, I sort of remember those first moments of going for the interview there and everything is in slow motion.
Yeah.
So it has helped me at the times just because I have this interest in it and have an eye for it.
Mm-hmm.
I actually don't think that one needs to study metaphor theoretically. Mm-hmm. To really understand how to make it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that it can help in just strengthening your eye.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, you know, a lot of my drawings have revolved around metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, I'm interested in metaphors for psychology or for thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the drawings that I do are attempts to visualize these metaphors for thinking. So, like, for example, we'll describe our thoughts as a chain or a stream or a network or a circuit board. Or, you know, we use these concrete objects almost to describe processes that happen within us that are abstract and invisible. So for me, this is totally fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that in the next year I'm going to want to explore more and more in my own drawings.
Mm-hmm. So can we talk about your art practice a little bit more? So you mentioned that you obviously do drawings. And how else does that kind of take its shape? What else do you do and how do you kind of feed that creativity for your own practice?
Yeah. So I will be honest here that in the next year, I'm going to be figuring out how to have a practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because for the past 7 years, I've poured so much energy into the New York Times and into being an art director.
Mm-hmm.
And really focusing on figuring out how to be an art director. I haven't quite figured out how to have a true art practice yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't quite comment on that yet because it's something I still have to discover.
Mm-hmm.
I think that for me, when I was working at the Times, I would draw sometimes in the evenings or on the weekends.
Mm-hmm. When you had a few minutes.
Yeah, exactly. But I haven't really been able to dive into it.
Yeah.
So that's something that's a true goal of mine for next year.
That's super exciting.
Yeah,
yeah,
I'm really excited.
And do you regularly draw now? Like now that you're traveling across Europe and teaching and maybe the deadlines aren't so intense?
I was this summer in New York when I had less deadlines
and
when I wasn't teaching. But I've been teaching quite intensively this spring and this whole fall.
Mm-hmm.
So I've really been pouring my energy into this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that maybe is how I work. I really pour all of my focus into whatever I'm doing at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm devoting next year to really working on drawing.
Mm. It's a really tough one. I've mentioned this to someone else I've spoken to on the podcast, but my kind of creative director role and then also my kind of artistic practice, I've always felt that they were like completely opposing and challenging.
Yeah.
One would completely drain me or the other one needed more time. And you kind of end up in this kind of bipolar world where you're trying to split your energy and your creative time. And it's not infinite creative energy. That's something I had to learn and to just be a little bit more, you know, gentle on myself.
Completely.
Like, and say, you know, you're focusing on this for now, just focus on that, because you just start beating yourself up.
Yeah.
If you try and do both, because you're not going to do either in any way satisfactory to yourself.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all of us at the Times who have been in art direction roles have that same feeling. And really try to be supportive of one another to not beat ourselves up, because the role is so exciting and dynamic, but it does drain creative energy because it is a creative role in the end. And so after a day of art directing and collaborating with people there, you don't have creative energy left to do your own work.
Yeah.
So it really takes all of that.
It's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So can you maybe now talk about your decision to leave the Times and the importance of making that decision for your own creative kind of work?
That was a very difficult decision to make, to leave that full-time job, because I had worked there for so long and because I had worked really hard at establishing myself there. And also because it's a job that I still love and honestly might return to at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But I reached a point after 7 years where, again, I felt that it was taking all of my creative energy. And I also was starting to feel very fatigued. And so I could just tell intuitively over time, perhaps within 5.5, 6 years, I started to feel like perhaps it would be wise to transition out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it took me a while to actually come to that decision. Again, because it's a role that I love collaborating with people. So it was sort of like having to quit something that you love, but that you know isn't sustainable. Mm-hmm. And that was my main issue mm-hmm. with that job. And it's an issue that everyone who has worked in that job has, is mm-hmm. that it's not sustainable. You can't do it for your whole career mm-hmm. because it's so intensive. And it requires so much speed and communication and tight deadlines. Mm. So, you know, if there's a way to make that job more sustainable, I think that would be wonderful because it is a very exciting job. Yeah. It was not an easy decision.
Yeah.
You know, luckily things have worked out well. I actually am working for the Times still, but mm-hmm. for a freelance job now mm-hmm. that takes up much less of my time. And that's why I've been able to travel and teach abroad mm-hmm. and sort of regain back some of that creativity and energy. Mm-hmm. You know, I also have a health issue. I was born with a heart valve issue, mm-hmm. and I've had two heart surgeries, actually. So for me, whenever I feel fatigued, it's a little bit concerning. Mm-hmm. And it's not a huge issue because, you know, this health problem is no longer a problem for me, mm-hmm. really. But it's something that I always pay attention to. Mm-hmm. And so when I started to feel very fatigued at the Times, I paid attention, and I felt like it was probably a good time to go do something less intense mm. for a while.
It's hard as well, isn't it? Especially when you love your job and what you do, and it does feed you in one way to then just say, okay, I need a break.
Yeah.
But it's amazing that you listen to your body, because the body's the best yeah. thing to tell you, isn't it?
Yeah.
How you're actually feeling.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's also hard sometimes to interpret those signs, you know? Mm. Why do you feel fatigued? Is it because you're working 12 hours a day?
Yeah.
Is it because you shouldn't be working that much, even if you want to? It's yeah. hard to interpret what to make of it.
Yeah. So what skills do you need to become an editorial art director?
I would say a lot of different skills, which is why it's an interesting job. At the very minimum, you need to be a graphic designer mm-hmm. because it does involve designing the actual printed page. Mm-hmm. And then also the digital page. I think you also need to be a curator. And so as a result, you need to be a collector of imagery and really understand the wide range of styles that exist within the art and illustration world. Mm-hmm. I also like to say that it involves a lot of diplomacy. You have to be a diplomat. Mm-hmm. Again, because the role involves so much communication with editors, with illustrators, with producers, you're sort of a middleman between all of these different people working on this product. Mm-hmm. And therefore, good communication skills and good diplomacy skills are key. Mm-hmm. I think also it involves a type of translation, that you're always having to translate from one medium to another. So now, you know, so many art directors that work in print also work for digital. Mm-hmm. And everything that appears in the digital space is appearing on desktops and iPads and mobile and all of these different ways that images and text are displayed. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, you have to think in terms of translations constantly. So, yeah, those would be sort of some of the main skills that mm-hmm. I would say.
Okay. Can you talk about maybe one of the biggest challenges in your career?
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest thing was gaining confidence in my own visual eye and in my own decision making. I think that it took a long time for me to really feel confident in the types of illustrations I was commissioning. And, you know, when you commission illustration, you're also choosing between different options in terms of different sketches. And so for me, it took a while to be confident to know that I was choosing the strongest sketch. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a challenge for all art directors and why we all kind of have discussions whenever we have to make decisions, mm-hmm. because it's really difficult sometimes to trust your own eye. And to really feel like you're making a confident and well thought out decision. Mm-hmm. So that to me was a huge challenge. And I think also because you have to oftentimes argue for what you think is the best decision, both with illustrators and then with editors. And so, you know, you have to defend your own opinion. And so you have to be really clear about what your opinion is. Mm. And I think, you know, to be honest, I grew up as an only child. I didn't really grow up in a very verbal household, mm-hmm. in terms of a very chatty household. So I wasn't used to having to defend myself all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it took me a while to really understand how to do that, mm-hmm. in a diplomatic way.
I guess as well, like defending, especially working with creative people, like emotion starts coming in,
yeah,
quite a lot.
Very
because
much.
It's painful when someone, yeah. says to you, no, that's not the one, or it's not good enough. I want something more like this.
Yes,
so,
definitely.
Yeah, navigating that must be challenging as well.
Yeah.
What do you love about what you do?
For me, what I've loved the most about it is the collaboration and the people. The fact that it has put me in touch with so many incredible artists worldwide. That has created constant inspiration and just the ability to know so many different types of people has been so rewarding. Mm. So that's definitely my favorite part.
Yeah, I guess as well, because you are commissioning, or you were commissioning from all over the world, mm-hmm. you must like have relationships with loads of different people in loads of different places.
Yeah, I do now.
Yeah.
Very much in Europe, especially. Uh-huh. And again, for me, creating real friendships with, uh-huh. people that you work with really helps the whole process. Mm-hmm. And I could see just in the tones of the emails I would send to illustrators how meeting people in person just makes the entire collaborative process so much more fun.
Uh-huh. Cool. So how do you feed your own creativity? What do you do? Where do you go?
For me, travel, of course, has always been so key. You know, I've talked about going to different festivals, conferences, places where a lot of people are meeting and exchanging ideas. Because I think for me, one thing that is always inspiring is just having a really good conversation. And that's how I get most of my new ideas. Mm-hmm. Just sharing references, sharing books, sharing things that you've eaten. So conversation, and then for me also reading and writing. I keep a journal pretty religiously, and I love reading literature and philosophy, and so I oftentimes recharge through reading.
Mm-hmm. So what advice would you give to someone aspiring to be an editorial art director?
So in addition to, you know, the basic skills that I discussed in terms of being a curator and a graphic designer and a visual thinker more generally, one thing that I think is really important is being very vocal about your interests. So for me, I feel like part of the way that I became an art director was that I was very vocal about my interest in visual metaphor with everyone that I worked with, mm-hmm. With students that I studied with the designers that I worked for. And so because of that, they all knew that I had this interest in illustration and visual metaphor, and therefore, when the job at the New York Times opened up, I was matched to that job. Somebody sent me the job announcement because they knew that I had this interest in illustration. Mm-hmm. And so I think that by being very vocal about my interests, it really has helped me in the end. And I think that that's what I would encourage just for anyone in the creative, mm-hmm. industries, is to be constantly expressing what you're interested in, even if it's something that you haven't truly developed yet, mm-hmm. Because then it becomes something that other people know, and then they can match you to future opportunities.
Great. So you're currently in Europe and you've, mm-hmm. got a bit more teaching to do. So what's coming up for you in the next kind of few months?
So I will be going to a couple festivals over the next couple weeks, mm-hmm. and teaching a few more workshops in Antwerp, Brussels, and Paris. And then I'm going back to New York, and I will be doing a residency in upstate New York in February, where I actually am planning on working on both drawings and drawing textiles. And actually, a lot of my year next year is quite open. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to continue part-time work at the New York Times, mm-hmm. But really try to concentrate mostly on drawing and this book idea that I have that involves both writing and drawing.
Great. Awesome.
Yeah.
I've so loved talking to you. Yeah, and it's been really exciting to meet you as well.
Thank you.
Something I always do when I wrap up the interview is I always ask each guest, is there a job or career in the creative industries that you know little about that's always intrigued you and you'd like to know more? And also another woman that I could get as a guest on Greater Than 11%.
So yes, one job that I am really interested in is textile design and clothing design. Mm-hmm. I've just started painting clothing, and I would be interested to hear from somebody who has started their own line as an independent woman, just their own fashion line or their own textile design company. So that would be really interesting for me. And in terms of a woman I'd like to recommend, I could really recommend Alicia DeSantis. She actually also works at the New York Times. She's a culture editor. But I think what's really interesting about her is how interdisciplinary her thought is. She worked for a long time as an information graphics creator for the New York Times. Now she's an editor, so she works both with graphics, photography, illustration, and writing. And then she also has a PhD in literature. So she combines all these incredible different threads of thought, and I think she would be a fascinating guest.
Yeah, she sounds amazing. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been lovely chatting to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review on Apple Podcasts, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. And also stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases. This podcast is made possible by the support of Hub, an insight-led content agency based in London. A huge thank you to the producers, Pat Murray and James Haberson, and to Mary Continenza for designing the beautiful artwork.